When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to this impromptu Manchester's Red podcast on a Sunday. Very unusual, I appreciate, but we haven't got a podcast for you on Monday, given that Manchester United play Wigan Athletic in the FA Cup at 8:15. So we decided that we were going to mop up all the Manchester United news from the back end of the week and the weekend, a bit of gossip, a bit of transfers chat. And at the back end of this podcast, there's going to be a preview with my good friend Nick Seddon, who's a Wigan Athletic journalist. He's going to give us the inside scoop from behind enemy lines and see what Wigan can bring to the table and whether they can cause a cup set, as it's known. Wigan, of course, beat Manchester City in 2013 to lift the FA Cup, but that was a very, very, very different Wigan Athletic side. And to beat Manchester United in the FA Cup third round in 2024 will be a much bigger scalp and beating Manchester City in 2013. So without further ado, I'm delighted to be joined by Tyrone Marshall, senior football writer at the Manchester Evening News. Let's get into it. Right, Ty, thanks for joining me. Just full disclosure, everybody that's listening, we are recording this on a Sunday, no, on a Thursday for a Sunday release. So if any of the stuff that we talk about does seem to have already happened or dispelled or any updates, then, you know, you're going behind the curtain here. We are actually recording this ahead of time. But Ty, I just want to jump straight in. So the news as of right now is that Jadon Sancho's loan deal is to be confirmed, with him going to Borussia Dortmund for a fee of around 3 million euros. So rather than speculate on whether it's going to happen, what does it mean for Jadon Sancho leaving Manchester United? Is his career over? Are they sending him on loan in case they sack Ten Hag, in case so they can bring him back? Like, what's going on?
I mean, I think a loan was the only possible option this window. It's, you know, it's hard to drum up sales. Sancho's value is at an all-time low, having not played in 4 months. I don't think there was ever a realistic possibility of a sale, really, unless he wanted to go to Saudi Arabia, and he doesn't. So that kind of made a loan inevitable. It's 3 million euros all in, so that's including the wages. So it's not even just a loan fee. So, you know, United are getting very little out of this. In fact, you know, I'm not sure either party's getting much out of it. Sancho's going back to somewhere where he's already impressed. If he played well, it kind of proves a point to no one, because he played well at Dortmund before he came to United and then didn't play well at United. So I don't beyond playing regularly, I don't really see that he's getting anything out of it. And if it goes badly for him, it will just look like he's a busted flush, really, as a high level footballer. And for United, I mean, it's buying time, isn't it? Like we say, they're getting barely anything in terms of a wage contribution and a loan fee. It is just a case of get him out the door, because his face doesn't fit anymore. He's training on his own. He's persona non grata at Carrington. So I'm not sure it really suits either party. The only possibility, I guess, is if the manager does change at United in the next 6 months, which is a fairly realistic possibility at the moment, it might mean Sancho can come back in the summer and have a fresh start. But, you know, there's a lot of water that's gone under the bridge, and not just with Ten Hag, but with everyone at the club, really, with teammates, with John Murtagh, with executives. You know, it's not just Ten Hag he's annoyed here. So I don't think it's as simple as the manager goes and it's back to square one. I still think there's a degree of making up to do. I think in the short term, it's just a case that Sancho won't be United's problem for the next few months. It's as simple as that, really.
You're seeing a lot of comments from like ex-players and colleagues that have sort of said, you know, he turns up late for training, he's lazy, he's this, he's that, he's the other. Why have United not just tried to sell him before this? And why is what's happening, basically?
He was, he was late for training when he was at Dortmund. That was a problem over there. You know, he was producing for them. He was a good player for them. His returns for them were fantastic. And the same reason that clubs, when players of this talent do have those issues, clubs try and work with them to get the most out of them. And United spent 73 million on Sancho. They do not want to cut their losses on him and sell him for a fraction of that. They don't want to give up on him because they know there's a talented player there. But there's obviously issues in terms of disciplines and things like that. You know, like I say, it was an issue at Dortmund. Whether it'll be an issue for the next 6 months, who knows? It's Dortmund's problem, I guess, in the short term. But it is something that he will undoubtedly have to improve on if he wants to make it anywhere, really. Because at some point, when the performances stop, like they have done with United, then the leeway you've got for that sort of thing reduces significantly as well. And I think that's what's happened.
We'll touch on it a little bit later on with the sort of comments that Jim Ratcliffe has made on United and the sort of silly money that they've spent and everything. But if United knew that Jadon Sancho had problems at Dortmund with being late and everything like that, why did they still pursue the transfer and want to buy him?
Let's not forget that as badly as it's turned out, in 2021, when United signed Sancho, every single United fan was excited by that deal. There wasn't a single person going, oh, that looks a bad deal. I think everyone in English football thought that looks a good deal. Still a very young player at the time. I think he was 21 when United signed him. A lot of young players have these kind of issues with lateness, with disciplinary issues. Let's not forget Garnacho had it on tour last year. So Sancho is not the only player in that United squad to have had those problems under Ten Hag. And when the talent is that big, you do kind of take a risk on it. You back yourselves to fix it. You back yourselves that the player will mature and change. So that's why they did it, I guess, because they know what a good player is in there. It's just it's that kind of player has not been seen so far at United.
I guess the thing that makes it even more frustrating is how poor Antony has been in that right position, and the fact that, you know, he'll probably never play for United again, but United do still have Mason Greenwood on the books, who is thriving over in Spain. And then if Jadon Sancho does go to Dortmund and thrives, you sort of see from United's perspective, they've got two right wingers that are out of the team, out on loan, doing really well, whilst United are stuck with Antony, who's, you know, been stinking the place out, and that £85 million transfer fee hanging over his head continually comes up. But he's just sort of all around doom and gloom at United. But just to move on from the Sancho situation, a bit of positive news for United fans is that Andre Onana is going to play the United's next two games, is that correct, before jetting off to AFCON?
Yes, it looks like it. He's certainly available for them. You would imagine he'll play them now, seeing as he's staying behind you.
So what's the story there? Because when United signed him, and then the story came out that had he retired from Cameroon and he's now going back to play for them, but it was all this, oh, Bayern Day needs to play, and he's, you know, he's going to be needed for potentially six games in January, February, whilst Onana is out of the team. He didn't play against Newcastle in the Carabao Cup. He didn't play in other games where it was slated that he might be given his opportunity. Now it looks like he's not going to play in January at all if United play these two games against Wigan and Spurs. So where does that leave him?
As number two keeper. That was very much the deal when he arrived. He was a cut price number two when Henderson left at, you know, €5 million release clause. He was a nice, easy deal to do. It's difficult to know whether to read too much into the fact that he hasn't played those games yet. The two Carabao Cup games were the obvious ones for him to play. Ten Hag said he wanted to play Onana in those to help him with his adaptation period. That's obviously going to be an issue for Bayinda if he ever plays, I guess. But, I mean, there is now a scenario where Onana misses no games for United. If Cameroon get knocked out in the group stage, then he'll be back in time for the a likely FA Cup fourth round game. So there's a possibility where he can play that Tottenham game, go, and they get knocked out in the groups. I think that's pretty unlikely, given it's a similar format to the Euros. It's almost impossible to get knocked out at the group stage of the AFCON, and a team of Cameroon's quality, you wouldn't expect it to happen to. It's an interesting scenario. The January the 1st, I think, was the official release date for players. Onana will be available for Cameroon's first game, but that's 23 hours after United Tottenham finishes. So it is literally finishing playing for United Tottenham, jumping on a plane within a matter of hours of landing, really, presuming he does play in that game. I think it gives credence to the idea that, A, he's a bit worried about his United place and missing too many games, and also that, you know, maybe he's not entirely sold on international duty. He had told United in the summer he had retired. He fell out very publicly with Rigobert Song in the World Cup just over a year ago. He's been talked out of retirement since then. This certainly adds to the impression that maybe he's not entirely sold on that idea, that there may have been a bit of pressure from Cameroon to come out of retirement. You know, he's a superstar in Cameroon, really. And if his arm's been twisted, he's probably been tempted into it, but he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because he also feels a bit of loyalty to United. I think it, you know, it shows how delicate a solution this is, that he could play two games within 24 hours, really, or two games, would it be two games within 26 hours, including a flight to the Ivory Coast. It's not an ideal solution for Cameroon, I guess. The fact that they've agreed to it would suggest that Onana must have put pressure on them and said, if you don't agree to something like this, I'm just not coming. I'm going to retire again. They've got friendly against Zambia next Tuesday, I think. Onana's going to miss all of that. So, you know, it does suggest that he has maybe put a bit of pressure back on Cameroon and said, I'll come, but I'm only coming at the very latest. It is a very interesting situation.
No one covers Manchester United quite like the Manchester Evening News. And through our MUFC Pro app, you can support our journalism and become part of our United community, getting the best experience ad-free, pop-up-free, and distraction-free as well, giving you the best news and interviews, great features, and much more. Now is the perfect time to subscribe, as we've just launched a special New Year offer, which includes MEM Premium for just £12 for 12 months. Download the app and get started today. We're launching a brand new bite-sized midweek audio-only podcast, bringing you the latest happenings from Old Trafford in a much more informal format, covering topical news, online gossip, transfers, and personal tales as a roundup of everything you might have missed surrounding Manchester United. Join host Tyrone Marshall and myself, Rich Fay, as we go inside the club, separating the fact from the fiction and giving you an edge on your mates down the pub.
Just moving on then to, there's a piece that you've written, it's an opinion piece that you've written, it's a really strong opinion piece on 13 players Man United, Ineos have 13 Man United players to build a squad around. Can you just give us an explanation to this and your thoughts around it and how it's going to help shape the future of the club after 10 years of turgidity, if that, is that even a word?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of guesswork, really, looking at, obviously, Ineos and Sir Dave Brailsford are in there at the moment and looking at the structures, and we are expecting a new sporting director in. While Brailsford and Ineos are looking at the structure at the moment, when the new sporting director is in place, he'll be looking at that squad and looking at who's staying and who's going. And the way this season's gone, it does kind of give you 12 or 13 players, I estimated, that you would say are here at the moment and will be staying next season and are solid bets. Obviously, more than that will stay. There's no way they are just going to go into next season with 12 or 13 players and sign another 10. But the future of so many is up in the air, really, that they are going to look at it. And especially, you know, we know what their Radcliffe used to phrase in 2019, that United have been dumb money for too long. And I think they'll be looking at some of those deals as well. Casemiro, as things stand, 3.5 years left, 31, not been good this season, highest earner in the squad. They're probably looking at that thinking time to cut losses. Varane, I think it's pretty clear what the direction of travel there is. I think I'd be surprised if he's here beyond the summer. There's obviously lots of players out of contract who are going to go. Martial, the option taken on Lindelof's contract, same we believe with Wan-Bissaka is going to happen. The future is very much uncertain around them. Antony, the same. You'd have to say the future is uncertain because performances have been nowhere near good enough. If Ten Hag goes, it might make a departure for him more likely because the two are kind of wedded together. So, you know, when you look at that squad and what they'd be planning for next season, there's probably not an awful lot of stability there at the moment.
Who do you think United need to bring in, or what positions do United need to bring in sort of in the summer? As of, you know, not saying bring in 10 players, but if you had a sort of looking at it and going, United need to bring in cover. So say for instance, Varane was to leave, so we need a centre-back. And then Anthony Martial was to leave. We need a striker. Is there any players that you know right now that you think would slot into that for an affordable price?
I mean, the thing is, it's so far away from the summer that I think it's difficult to know who's going to be available and what sort of budget United will have to work with. It's, you know, league qualification. We know FFP is pretty tight. I think it's fairly clear they're going to need a forward. Martial's going to go. Højlund needs some help up there. So I think that has probably got to be the priority, really. At least one more centre-forward coming in. Maybe a centre back if Varane goes, if Lindelof goes as well, at least one centre back, maybe a right back if you want an upgrade there. So there's, you know, there are areas of the squad I think that need looking at. Striker is definitely the priority for me, but it's so far away from the summer window that it's impossible really to put a name on it, I think, at the moment of who they should go for. But the striker certainly is the priority. I mean, you'd look at the moment, I guess, and think of someone like Osimhen, but it's not beyond possibility that he goes somewhere else this year, that his situation at Napoli changes in 6 months. But it feels like they need that kind of calibre of striker.
Do you think United could end up with another summer transfer saga? You know, a Jadon Sancho-esque, a Harry Kane-esque? Or do you think that with the new ownership sort of Ineos, that they might actually have a bit of structure in place and they actually know who to target rather than linked with everybody?
Yeah, I mean, it's always possible, and these links will always continue because, United, if you're an Asian, United are a good club to get your player linked to. It puts them on the market, gets them out there in terms of newspaper coverage for a potential move or getting them a new contract. So, those links will never go away. And to be fair to United, that is absolutely not their fault that agents use them in newspaper talk and things like that for reasons of getting a move and advertising their players on the market and things like that. You know, there's always a chance that transfers will drag on all summer. It isn't a problem just to United. It does seem to have happened to them a lot and happened to them unsuccessfully, I guess, a lot recently. Sancho the year before he signed, Frankie de Jong in Ten Hag's first season. They were obviously pretty keen to avoid that last summer by distancing themselves from Kane so early. I can't imagine Ineos would want to be involved in something like that, but the reality is sometimes it's just hard to avoid. There's a reason so many deals go down to the wire that unless there's a player easily available or it suits all parties, then these negotiations can be pretty difficult. So I would think Ineos and whoever the manager is would want business done early, but that is always a lot easier said than done.
And just before we wrap up this opening part of the show, before we move on to a preview of Wigan versus Manchester United, one big positive that United have had is that Martinez and Casemiro were both back in training. We've seen video footage, I think it was head of Bayern Munich, of Martinez in training, which you can find if you look on our Twitter feed and our YouTube and TikTok. But Ty, how big a boost is this, especially if they can both get minutes against Wigan? Wigan are what, 18th, I think, in League One at the time of recording, there or thereabouts. Not expected to be a big threat. Do you reckon Martinez and Casemiro could start or at least come off the bench in this game?
I mean, maybe Casemiro on the bench. It still feels fairly early for them. They've only just returned to training. You're probably only looking at 3 or 4 days of training. Casemiro's been out for 2 months. Martinez has been out for 4 months, I think. So it's quite a long absence, really. You look at De Bruyne at City, who's been out for 4 months and has trained for 2.5 to 3 weeks now and still hasn't actually played yet. So it might be that Wigan comes too soon for them. The bench is big enough these days to get them on the bench in case they can get 10 minutes, I guess. There's the Tottenham game the week after and then a 2 week break. There's probably a decent chance of maybe a behind closed doors friendly during that break to get them some game time and try and get them fit and firing for hopefully an FA Cup fourth round game or that Wolves game. Ten Hag has kind of pinned his future to the hopes of getting an improvement out of these returning players by saying it's going to be like 5 or 6 new signings. So he'll be pleased to see them back and hoping that they can perform.
So hopefully them two can come back. And as you said, that Ten Hag said that it was like new signings. We hope to see Mason Mount return at some point as well. Yeah, Ty, thanks for joining me for this brief Sunday podcast. I'm going to hand over now to myself and Nick Seddon, who are going to speak behind enemy lines as Manchester United face Wigan Athletic away at the DW Stadium on Monday evening at 8:15. Join us in part two, and we will see you on Tuesday for the Manchester's Red podcast back in the office.
No one covers Manchester United quite like the Manchester Evening News. And through our MUFC Pro app, you can support our journalism and become part of our United community, getting the best experience ad-free, pop-up-free, and distraction-free as well, giving you the best news and interviews, great features, and much more. Now is the perfect time to subscribe, as we've just launched a special New Year offer, which includes MEM Premium for just £12 for 12 months. Download the app and get started today. We're launching a brand new bite-sized midweek audio-only podcast, bringing you the latest happenings from Old Trafford in a much more informal format. covering topical news, online gossip, transfers and personal tales as a roundup of everything you might have missed surrounding Manchester United. Join host Tyrone Marshall and myself, Rich Fay, as we go inside the club, separating the fact from the fiction and giving you an edge on your mates down the pub.
Hello and welcome back to the Manchester's Red Sunday Special podcast. I'm now delighted to be joined by Nick Seddon. He's an old pal of mine, also a seasoned journalist. He used to cover Latics and has also done a bit of horse racing in his time. Nick is currently travelling the world. So Nick, without me spoiling it all for you, will you just give us a bit of an insight as to where you are, what you're up to and what your history is?
Hey Seb. Yeah, all good, thank you. In Sydney, Australia at the moment on something of a career break. But yeah, I was a journalist in the UK for about 10 years, primarily probably on the horse racing, worked for the Jockey Club for the last couple of years. But Wigan has always been the first love. I worked for the media team as an intern for a few years, about 10 years ago, doing the match reports and the Twitter. And I've covered them as well for the Wigan Post in the absence of Paul Kendrick over many years as well. So plenty of ups, plenty of downs watching Latics, and hopefully a big night for them on Monday night.
Right, well, let's get into it, Nick. It's Wigan v Man United on Monday evening, our time. I don't know what it is where you are. It's probably about 3 o'clock in the morning or something. But I want to throw a stat straight down your throat. Sean Maloney, the manager. What is Sean Maloney's most famous stat versus Manchester United?
Oh, that's easy. He is the man that scored the goal in Wigan Athletic's only victory against Manchester United. That was back in 2012. It was a significant one as well. It was arguably the moment that turned the title race in the favour of Manchester City and led to that moment that we all love and remember. It was a heck of a goal as well. He was a real player on his day, Sean Maloney, curled it into the bottom corner. And it is the only time that we've had any kind of joy against Manchester United. Wigan and United have played each other 19 times in competitive games. The scorelines read 18-1 in favour of Manchester United. And even more crushingly, the goal difference is 65-5 to the Red Devils.
Yep, I was actually, I've written all this down myself because I was going to throw this at you and say, Nick, what's the goal difference? What's the Sean Maloney, though, formerly of Hibs, and he was relieved of his duties in 2022, joined Latics just under a year ago now, in January the 28th, I think it is, off the top of my head, 2023. So what has he brought to the club and how does he go about? How does he, the biggest question, the elephant in the room, how does Sean Maloney's Wigan Athletic beat Man United? Now, one more stat I want to throw at you before you answer this question. In the past 10 games, the scorelines have all been goal or goals to nil. Wigan winning one of them, United winning nine of them. It's a very low scoring tally as far as Wigan are concerned. Wigan have never scored more than one goal against Manchester United. Man United's average goals against Wigan is 3.15 goals per game. Wigan's is 0.26, which means that this game is probably going to end 4-3 to Wigan. But just looking at Sean Maloney's tactics, looking at the squad that Wigan have got, 17th in League One, obviously that point deduction, which I'm sure you'll talk about, really doesn't reflect well on, you know, Wigan should be a lot higher in the table realistically without that. But yeah, how do Wigan compete with Manchester United?
I think we can come back to that, Seb. I think the first thing to say is it's actually a remarkable achievement that Wigan Athletic are even in the third round of the FA Cup against Manchester United. If you go back to May last year, the club have had a terrible time with ownership issues. They very nearly went under, I'm sure you'll all remember, during COVID. They were bought out by a Bahraini consortium and they struggled inevitably in the end. And this time back in May, you know, we were back in peril. The club was really struggling for money and it got to the point where Sean Maloney talked about it to Paul Kendrick in the Wigan Post the other day. There was moments where he didn't think the club was going to survive. So, I mean, if you go back to the last game of the season in the Championship last year against Rotherham, there was a huge amount of players that actually refused to play because they weren't being paid their wages. It actually led to quite a few nice moments. There was a guy, Lannan Goal, Sam Tickle, made his professional debut. He was so good, he's never left the team since. So there are moments too that were bright spots in it. But I mean, the club has had to be rebuilt from the ground up, really. Sean Maloney and Gregor Riop, the sporting director, they are the recruitment team. There isn't really a recruitment team at Wigan. They built a squad that is competitive in the league despite a points deduction. It's a very young and stretched squad, and it's all moving forward, but there's still a long way to go. They've shown plenty of promise so far this season. They're a very talented and young squad. But yeah, the elephant in the room is there's a big step up here between being competitive with Barnsley like they were on New Year's Day, got a fantastic point, and yeah, being competitive with Man United, a Premier League Champions League team.
So how does Sean Maloney set his team up? How does he set up? He prefers a 4-2-3-1 formation, often 3-4-1-2 or 3-4-3, but more often than not, he opts for the 4-2-3-1. So how does he set up, and how does he actually attack, basically? How does he attack Man United? Or do they park the bus and look for a counter-attack?
Well, Maloney's a disciple of Roberto Martinez, so he was the man that got Wigan there. Finest hour. They won the FA Cup in 2013. He likes to play nice football. And I think Maloney took over from Colo Torre back this time last year. And it was a bit of a disaster, to be perfectly honest, under Torre. So it was more of a firefighting at first, keeping the goals down, keeping Wigan tight, getting them more difficult to beat. And it's been more of the same in League One, really. They're at the best, they're a difficult team to beat. They're a young side, so they don't always have the best days. But, you know, they've shown some real glimpses. They went to Bolton earlier in the season and put four past Bolton. They will be the only team to do that this season. Bolton probably going to go up, you'd think, just looking at the league table. So there's plenty of players in there, but I think he'll stay true to what they do. He'll keep them tight at the back. He'll keep that formation that he plays, and he'll look to really put United under pressure. They've got a lot of talent. I mean, Charlie Hughes at the back. I mean, it's impressive for Wigan's academy setup. They've got two young lads, Charlie Hughes and Sam Tickle. One plays for England under-20s, the other England under-21s. So there's a lot of talent there at the back, and I think he'll trust them to just stay true to how they play and try and rattle United that way. But it's a huge task. They're probably two of the main players to look out for. Callum Lang and Marshall Godo, who's on loan from Fulham, probably two of our more exciting flair players. I think Stephen Humphreys, the man who scored the winning goal in the last round, is an injury doubt. And that's a key thing. There's a few players missing from injuries. Matthew Smith, a Ladley Sound from Arsenal, a central midfielder. He's missing. He'll be a big miss. Tom Pearce at left back is another miss. So, yeah, I think if you go back to the game, Wigan knocked Man City out as a League One team in 2018. And that was when City were at the peak of their powers. They still are, of course. And it was all about that night. I mean, it's still remarkable that they beat them. Keeping it tight, trying to hit them on the break. And I think World Great's shot on goal was Wigan's only shot of the entire game. So it's probably more of the same. I mean, there'll be a near sellout crowd on Monday night. So hopefully the crowd will get behind them and make it a difficult game for Man United. But we know the quality United have going forward. And it's just going to be a case of hoping, keeping it tight, keeping them under pressure, and hoping that United have a bad night, I think.
Yeah, well, we know that United's form has been very, very hit and very, very, very missed this season. I think United have lost, I think it's 14 games so far this season. Worst start to a league campaign in, what, since the 30s, I think the year. United are actually going to be looking at Wigan as a way to get back to form, but it was said on our podcast earlier this week that if United get beat by Wigan, it's probably, you know, ta-ra to the manager, because that would be a disaster. United are out of the Champions League. We're not going to win the league title. Out of the Carabao Cup, we whimpered out against Newcastle. You know, facing Wigan on paper is an easy win. You know, as far as it looks on paper, you know, not in terms of the actual football itself. You know, Rasmus Højlund has been out and has only scored one goal in the league this season. Anthony Martial is a complete waste of space. So United's attacking options are a bit flimsy. You know, in midfield, United continuously getting overrun. And United in the league have a -5 goal difference, which tells you how bad the defence has been this season. So regardless of what it looks like on paper, you know, Wigan, they've got nothing to lose at the end of the day, have you? You've got nothing to lose. You can go out there, you know, you look at getting a draw, I think you end up with a replay. And if you get a replay at Old Trafford, the money as well that will bring in is great. But obviously from the club's perspective, they can beat Man United in the third round. The amount of money that will bring in would be much more of an appeal to Wigan than it would be for United to progress. But like I say, United should be going out there looking to use this as a bit of an exhibition, because they've got Spurs next in a week or so, but then they've got a 2-week break. And if they beat Wigan, they've got a game at the end of the month. And if they don't beat Wigan, they've not. And it'll have to be behind closed door friendlies or whatever. So, and with all the takeover stuff that's been going on at Old Trafford at the minute, you know, if Ten Hag was to lose this game, do the new owners look at it and go, right, you know, we need to get shot of this while we've got a bit of a break to find somebody else. So the pressure's on Man United, you know, tenfold, and Wigan could potentially use that to their advantage. But, you know, who's Wigan's danger man? Who is the guy that is going to be the guy that scores that goal? Who has that Will Grigg moment? It's going to be Will Grigg, 1-0 up the ticks. Who's going to be that guy?
Yeah, as you say, it's a bit of a free hit for Latics, isn't it? They've just got to go in there and really give it a go. There's going to be a near sellout crowd at the DW. If they can earn a replay, fantastic. If they can't, I mean, there's TV money on a Monday night. So it's a huge boost to the club that, as I mentioned earlier, still rebuilding, you know, since Mike Danson, a local businessman, took over. So, yeah, I mean, I mentioned them slightly earlier. Callum Lang is probably the man. He's, you know, he's been excellent since coming back in from Latics. He was loaned out several times when he was younger. And then during administration, he was brought back in the first time around during COVID. And he's never looked back. He's capable of moments of brilliance. And he's also quite good at the dark arts as well. So he'll be in United's faces, I imagine. But Marshall Godo as well, he's just getting back to fitness from Fulham. He's capable of a moment. And Tello Asgard, worth mentioning him, he's a Wigan Athletic Academy product. He's got a habit of scoring goals in the FA Cup. He knocked Blackburn out this time last year with a howitzer. He's capable of hitting them from distance. And, you know, as we say, it's just going to be a case of having a go and give it to Tello 30 yards out. You never know what will happen.
Well, I saw that you wrote a piece for Quiff, betting site, recently. What was your take on the Wigan game? Just spell it out for the listeners who won't have seen that piece. What was your how do Wigan win moment?
I'm quite a downbeat Wigan Athletic fan at times. I think I've basically just said that it's going to be a struggle. It's an achievement to be here. The stats are seriously against Wigan Athletic. We've mentioned the score lines. We normally get put away by Manchester United. It's Man City that we have the joy against. We're unbeaten in 3 FA Cup ties against City. I don't think any other club in the country can boast a stat like that. Against United, not so much. But we'll see. They're at home. It's the magic of the cup. There's a near sellout crowd. It's going to be the first time in a long time that there's going to be, you know, 20,000 plus in the DW stadium, which is fantastic for the club and the town. And it's going to be a bit of a magic of the cup formula. If we're going to knock United out, they're going to need a combination of the team being at their best, a bit of luck, when they beat City, Fabian Delph was sent off for City, gave them that little advantage. They're going to need bits of that, you know. Reality speaks, you know, at the moment they're in the bottom half of League One. Without the deduction, they're mid-table. You know, that's where they are at the moment. So they've got the players with a bit of talent to cause them trouble, but it's going to be a combination. But I think for me, logic tells you that Ten Hag's men are just going to have too much quality. I think they will be in for a tough night. You know, you're not going to be able to go to a League One club and not have any trouble. You know, that they're going to keep it tight. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. It's going to be a difficult place to go. But I think United will have enough in the end for Wigan.
Yeah, well, United have Erik ten Hag's press conference for those still listening from earlier on. We're recording this on Thursday ahead of a release on Sunday, where Erik ten Hag's press conference was this afternoon, sort of about 4:30 local time. And he's sort of, you know, confirmed that Casemiro and Sandro Martinez back in training, whether they will feature. They may be on the bench, probably not come on, a bit like what City did with Kevin De Bruyne. But it's positive signs for United that these players are coming back at the right time. I mean, any time's the right time. But given how poor United have been, they need their superstar names to be back in the team. And it'd be like, I think Ten Hag said it himself, it'd be like 5 new signings when all these players come back. But, so let's have a score prediction, Nate. We'd like to sign all these podcasts off with a bit of a score prediction. My score prediction, based on based on the history of these games, is United comfortably winning 3-0. I say comfortably on paper. I don't mean comfortably in the actual 90 minutes, but United beat Palace in the Carabao Cup 3-0. You know, they didn't really turn up. And then Palace came to Old Trafford a few days later and beat us, but that's another story. But I just think United should go out there. He should be playing a full-strength team, given the fact that we've got a bit of a break. Onana's sticking around, not going to AFCON. So I'm going to put my neck on the line and say 3-0.
Yeah, the head says probably 0-2. I think Wigan will keep it tight and United will break them down slowly and get a couple of goals to put them away. But we don't like the head, do we? The heart says 1-0, Callum Lack.
Brilliant. Well, for anybody listening who thinks Wigan do have a bit of a chance, before Wigan's recent form, where they've lost three of their last six, I think it is, they actually only lost one of 14. So, you know, if you don't just look beyond, you know, if you look beyond the end of your nose, beyond the last five, six results, Wigan have actually got a pretty decent form. And, you know, it shows that they're stable at the back. They're not easy to break down. And, you know, United could be in for a tough night. But as a United fan, I want to see United go out there and do a job. I don't want there to be any talk of Erik ten Hag losing his job because we only beat you 1-0 in the 90th minute. I don't want a 2-0 down 3-2 comeback again that papers over the cracks. You know, United, they've just lost to Forest. United need to go out there and do a demolition job, really. It's probably not going to happen. It's probably going to be 1-0 either way. But I just hope that to sort of give a bit of respite to this negativity that's building around Manchester United, that United do go out there and do a job. But Nick, it's been great to speak to you. I hope everything's well in Sydney. You can go back to bed now. And, you know, if anybody wants to catch up with Nick's happenings and follow his journey around Australia, where can we find you?
Yeah, cheers, Seb. It's 7:45 here now in the morning, so I whizz back to bed, and then it's still hostels at the moment, so I'll be turfed out at about 10 so they can clean the room. So it's tough at the top, mate. But yeah, I'm on Twitter at @NickSeddon_. That's probably the best place to catch me. I'm still freelancing bits and bobs in the UK. But no, it's all about the A-League for me these days.
I've seen, Nick, on your Twitter, all these grounds that you ground hop in, and the was it the Melbourne Derby you watched recently? Melbourne City versus Melbourne Victory?
The Sydney Derby, yeah, which was pretty raucous, actually. There was about, I don't actually know the attendance figure, but there must have been 15,000 to 20,000 on, and there was a big tifo in the home end. So it was a good effort, flares and the likes. So yeah, they're giving it a good go, the Aussies.
Well, we'll sign off there, Nick. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Good to see you virtually. And I'll give you a shout next time United play Wigan. Thanks for listening, everybody. And if you want to hear more of the Manchester is Red, don't forget to like, subscribe, follow us, and we'll see you all in the next one.